Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
Oh, the great power competition. Many label China as what's called the pacing threat. So let's ask the question, what does that mean?
Excellent. Okay, so I agree with all the points the gentleman to my right made. And so I'll more get into why China is the pacing threat. And there's four dates that come to mind. So 1989, the collapse of the Soviet Union and the USSR is step one in how they elected to kind of challenge us. Number two would be the Gulf War. Right, so in 1991, China sat back and watched how we executed the Gulf War, and they said, okay, the Soviet Union has collapsed. We are now paramount when it comes to a communist nation. We just watched how the United States conducts warfare, and we're going to make sure that we can overcome that. The third one's going to be the financial collapse of 2008 as a significant milestone, and now they viewed our economic system as weaker than theirs, right? So they're going to try to gain influence through a financial markets, right? So now you have USSR collapsing, you have the Gulf War, you have the financial crisis. The last one being 2016 with the election of Donald Trump. So we will not go to a political lens here, but it was a change in the makeup of how we interact with our international partners and our allies, right? So those four moments have led to where China is the pacing threat, and they need to be, right? They are the country that globally has the ability to engage us on an economic level, to update and move their country as fast as they want, whether it be internal or external.
You know, this is at the Chamber of Commerce military luncheon last week. Very interesting conversation about, or actually, I guess maybe it was 2 weeks ago now. It doesn't matter. It was recent. It was very good. We had three members of the military. We had Seamus, who you've heard on my show. He's the commanding officer of the United States Air Force 479th Flying Training Group here on NAS Pensacola. They train all the backseaters for all the NFOs for all the Air Force train here, in case you didn't know that. Big operation. That was him speaking there. You had Colonel Marshall Scanlon, who is the 350th Civil Affairs Army Reserve commanding officer at Corry Station. Also big. We haven't talked with him in the Lieutenant Command, but we will very soon. And then retired Lieutenant Colonel Don Pilcher from the Marine Corps talking about just like big picture stuff. You know, what's going on with China? What's going on with Russia? What's going on with Ukraine? What's going on with how we think about the world order? And one of the things I took away from it is I hate to acknowledge that this surprised me because it shouldn't have been a surprise to me. It was more of a relief, really, that these very high level, you know, 06, sixth grade officer ranks think about the big stuff a lot and have really well thought out views on what's going on in the world, which is kind of reassuring because they should, you know. But that, you know, ability to rattle off the history of what he thinks has led to where China is today as a pacing threat, you know, that was a very interesting analysis. That was crucial. Also, you know, very well aware of the history of China from China's perspective of how they've gotten to where they are on the world stage. Again, back to Seamus.
The factors that come into play there is 1921, 1927, and 1949. And those would be the 100-year points of when the CCP came to power, when the PLA was formed, and when the CCP taking power in China will hit 100 years. Those are their benchmarks. In 2027 right now is where they want to be on equal terms as us. And that's why they are the pacing threat, because we need to be prepared to meet them.
And that's 3 years away, and they're probably ahead of that schedule. And I'll tell you, one of the things that Americans have trouble wrapping our brains around is China has a 100-year plan. We are lucky if we have a next-year plan because of the way we do elections, because of the way we don't do budgeting properly. This is a massive problem for us in our military development. But also, just generally speaking, you know, it's kind of like this cultural fable, but it's true, is that Asian countries have long-term plans. You know, for them, 20 years is short term, right? And for us, 20 years is like, I don't even, what's that number again? We just don't think that way. Now, historically, we've done okay nevertheless, but if they're making a 100-year plan and trying to follow it and trying to get ahead of it, and we're doing a 1-year plan at best, that's not great, especially when you're talking about military procurement, development, repair, shipbuilding, things that are related to, you know, military issues. Look at World War II. I mean, we came back because we had massive untapped, you know, capacity, but we were way behind in the beginning. It was bad, really bad after Pearl, right? Because we weren't paying attention. We didn't care, not really. And we certainly weren't geared for it. Well, it's not a great thing to depend on your latent, untapped natural capacity. Oh, and by the way, our financial situation was a little bit different in 1941 than it is today. our debt, our finances are, Americans are used to being on top, and we're used to being strong, and we're used to being capable of responding to everything, and they are taking for granted our lackadaisical attitude towards this stuff, that Americans don't care, don't know, don't want to know, assume we're the best. And that is a very, very dangerous assumption when you're involved in these kind of competitions.
I want to also highlight, though, relative to why they're the pacing threat we just covered, but they are not the only threat, right? And that's the key element to that. And so while we as a nation lost sight while we conducted the violent extremist organization thing we did during the global war on terror, right? We lost track of what the other countries were doing. They sat back and watched us.
And developed and prepared and thought, and we were actively engaged in massive depletion of our treasure and lives and revealing our strategies for conducting warfare, which some they learned from, some, you know, Russia apparently didn't learn real well because they didn't have any logistical capabilities whatsoever. But again, we need to make sure that we're keeping our eye on China, but not losing sight of the other emerging threats that are certainly real.
To that degree, we cannot lose track of the other threats out there for us. So China's the pacing threat. We need to make sure we build our military and our capabilities around. But Russia, is a revanchist Russia, is, you know, impacting the liberal world order. That is a problem in Eastern Europe. Iran continues to sow problems across the Middle East. The Democratic People's Republic of Korea currently has between 10 to 12,000 soldiers in Eastern Ukraine, or at least on the border of Eastern Ukraine, and they continue to work illicit funding around the world. And violent extremist organizations are not going anywhere, right? They will continue to seek safe haven, and we need to continue to go out and mow that grass, find out where they're going to replant themselves, and as they grow, go back and kill that grass again, right? So China is the pacing threat, because they can challenge us on a peer level, but all those other threats still exist.
By the way, I love mow the grass as the way to describe handling terrorist threats. But he's right. Revanchist, by the way, if you don't know the term, just means to the mindset or ideology of being in recovery of what was lost to you mode. That's what Russia is, right? Putin still thinks Ukraine belongs to him, and the borderlines just don't reflect that among all the other satellite states that were lost during the fall of the Soviet Union and the end of the Cold War. So that's what revanchist means. It's a term that maybe you're not familiar with. We'll come back to this in a second because, like I said, very interesting stuff. John Pickens has got traffic on the fives. John?
Well, traffic is actually flowing very smoothly this morning. I-10, I-110. Even Highway 90 coming from Payson to Pensacola or vice versa is looking good. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the five.
Thanks so much, John. Somebody points out that when you get to that level of leadership, you've gone to a military college, like, you know, I know Seamus went to the war college, and you get an education on history like that. And good point. I mean, it's not just like he woke up one day and was like, well, I'm going to be a captain, you know, or I'm going to be a colonel. I probably ought to learn this stuff, right? But I mean, the military has a way of making sure that you know what you need to know. Good point. I appreciate that reminder. Back to the conversation. What about the other threats? You know, outside of China, how do you order them?
China is not the sole threat. There are several out there. So the next question is, what, in your opinion, is the proper order of priority that we should employ when dealing with these other great power competitors?
The pacing threat is the pacing threat. We must build our military and our strategy towards China, because if that kicks off, that is going to be the worst. In terms of where my priority, if you allowed me to use my opinion, Dan, so Russia right now is where we need to keep our eyes relative to our prosperity, our security, and our values, right? So the closest threat, in my opinion, is going to be Russia. And the element of that and why that's important is I believe the biggest deterrent that we have to keeping China in a box is support of Ukraine. If we continue to provide support to a democratic nation in their fight against a revanchist country that's looking to move authoritarianism and the ability to say what matters where we have borders, borders don't matter, you can do what you want, well, that provides an element of opportunity to China to say, well, we can just move against Taiwan. So our ability to sustain the fight in Ukraine is what I find most important.
And it's a lesson not just to deal with Russia, but it's a lesson to China about what happens if they move against Taiwan. A common enough theory why it's important to respond in Ukraine. Also because you're defending the current, you know, world order, that there are boundaries around these countries and those boundaries matter and you can't just violate them without consequences.
So those are kind of the two that I put on the priority list for what...
He also mentioned terrorism, you know, finding them, killing them, dealing with them continually. That threat's not going away.
So those are kind of the two that I put on the priority list for what's going to impact our daily lives is going to be Russia and violent extremist organizations. That being said, we must maintain eyes on China as a pacing threat. However, we need China. We need a relationship with China. The global commons does not exist without a properly running relationship between China and the United States, because we have interdependent relationships, especially in the economic realm.
Yeah, and you know, there are serious consequences to ratcheting up our engagements with China. I mean, we're already seeing this, right? You have just this week, the news came out that China is in introducing export bans on key microchip elements to the United States as a response to what they perceive as, you know, Biden's activities, and not stated overtly, but even, you know, Trump's announced 10% tariff on their goods if they don't handle the fentanyl crisis. I mean, you can throw your weight around, but you're throwing your weight around in a ring with another super heavyweight, you know, and that matters, and they're going to respond. You know, they are, gallium, antimony, germanium. Those are all national security issues. You got, I think graphite is one of those, nickel, cobalt, you know, things that they have been heavily invested in acquiring, controlling the production of. And, you know, if we're going to, you know, onshore our microchip production, well, guess what they're going to say? What are you going to make them with? I mean, this is where we are. So, you know, again, you know, how does this affect you? Well, you know, are you going to be able to buy your cars and your computers and your iPhones? Do you need them? Do we depend on this stuff? What's our economic impact if those things become difficult to produce? And that's, you know, there's microchips and everything, right? So the reason I wanted to cover this is because I thought it was an incredibly useful discussion about these issues. Things that most Americans, because we're, you know, watching Dance with the Stars or the latest binge watch on Netflix, or, you know, even the highly informed among us who are watching the Sunday morning shows and, you know, watching the evening news or whatever, this doesn't come up often enough. It's not enough news of the day for most news organizations to deal with. And I thought, well, that's a gap. Because, you know, all of a sudden you might, you know, because Americans are historically very bad at caring about foreign affairs ever since, gosh, at least the 60s. You know, we cared a little bit during the 80s. But, you know, I mean, if you go watch the debates, like the Nixon-Kennedy debates, the level of information that they presumed you knew about foreign affairs was, I mean, you know, master's level. Today, where's Nicaragua on a map, average American? Well, what is Nicaragua? You know, like, is that a car? Like, what is that? I mean, it's embarrassing, right? So paying attention to how can we run a democracy where we are the ones who pick our leaders if we don't even understand some of these issues? Back to the conversation. So how should we handle China? You know, Dan McCord asked the specific question.
Read that China is the pacing threat. How does or how can U.S. military capitalize on our previous specific involvement and experiences to best position ourselves to face this pacing threat? The Pacific is a vast area. How in the world do we handle and manage that?
Yeah, and it means a basic change in how we think about our military, you know, being able to work and operate in shallow water, beach area, around islands kind of conditions for the Marines instead of working on land. But I thought, you know, Seamus had a really interesting, and I know I focus a lot on his comments because I thought Scanlon's comments were good and Pilcher's comments were good. For whatever reason, Seamus's comments resonated the most with me. I thought it'd be the most interesting to play for you, but they all are in agreement about this stuff. Like, they're all saying kind of the same thing in different ways. But Seamus had a very interesting take on the Vietnam War that I had never quite heard before. And I thought this was fascinating because we're not going to be able to do this alone. We're not in a position to do it alone. We're not the superpower that we once were in order to do it alone. And it would be dumb for us to try to do it alone. We're going to need partner states. We're going to need allies, a lot of allies, in order to make this function long term. And, you know, democratic people who believe in our basic ideals. But he was talking particularly about Vietnam, a war that most Americans think we just lost. Okay, but, you know, think more long term.
I had a really good conversation with someone recently where, you know, we talked about winning and losing. What does that mean? You know, I certainly posit you could argue that we did not lose the Vietnam War. And I say this based on the fact that, you know, in my National War College class, I had two Vietnamese officers with me. Right. So what does that mean? We need to get beyond who our friends and foes are. If we want to talk about, hey, we can't like people that we've been on opposite sides of a conflict with in the past, well, then we shouldn't be friends with the United Kingdom either, right? Right? So we need to understand what our advantages are, what our opportunities are, how do we take advantage of those for what we have today. And Vietnam right now is a country that is not a fan of the People's Republic of China, and they are reaching out to us, and we need to make sure that we build that bond, not based on our view of the past, but understanding what's important for tomorrow. And that's kind of what the key element of the difference between an authoritarian government that only wants to move their path forward and the democratic norms that we promote around the world to make sure that we can maintain as together the global commons for everybody's good.
Nations and peoples who believe in freedom and democracy are going to be our allies in this. And they are not eager to see China take over because they know what China means for the world if that happens, or even for their sphere of influence if that happens. So it's very interesting to think about. And we'll come back to this, you know, some more, because there's a lot more in this conversation. 437-1620, 437-1620. By the way, I do need to give a little hat tip kudos to Lico Crumb, who is, he's my rock star for audio at these events. He's the one who gets me this golden quality audio, so I always appreciate him. John's got traffic on the fives. John?
That's right. No accidents to let you know about right now. Traffic is flowing smoothly all over the area, not seeing any delays. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
Trek Bicycle Store of Pensacola is the area's premier bicycle store and full-service repair shop for all makes and models. They specialize in top-notch customer service with the largest selection of e-bikes around. Trek Store has a full line of bike accessories and racks and can fit all riders from a child's first to seniors. Locally owned and operated by Robbie Mott, serving cyclists for over 20 years, you'll experience the best at Trek Bicycle Store of Pensacola, 701 East Cervantes Street, and online at trekstoregulfcoast.com.
It's open enrollment time for health insurance.
Have you signed up? Do you know where?
Whether you currently have coverage or not, there are some important things you need to know. Get your questions answered. Tune in today at 9 a.m. as Chad PQ from Affiliated Insurance joins the Pensacola Expert Panel so you can get the facts and the latest information on healthcare.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Text or call with your questions. 850-437-1620.
Here are the News Radio 92.3 AM 1620 contest rules. You can win one prize per household per contest in any 30-day period, unless specified by individual contest rules. All prizes on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620 are non-transferable, non-redeemable for cash, or exchangeable for any other prize. News Radio 92.3 AM 1620 prizes must be redeemed within a 30-day period of winning. For a complete list of rules, visit newsradio923.com.
This is Hill Kelly Dodd wishing you a safe holiday season. Remember, please don't drink and drive.
Hi, this is Joe with Peden Air Conditioning, Plumbing, and Electrical wishing you a very comfortable holiday season.
This is Barry Cole at Beret Jewelers wishing you a safe holiday season. Remember, please don't drink and drive.
Hi, everybody. This is Sonia Duquette with Trinity Wellness of Pensacola and now in Pace. And we just want to wish you a very happy holiday. And we're just thinking of all of you. Bye. Happy holidays.
Hi, I'm Steve Taylor, and I usually hang out in the newsroom at News Radio 92.3. I'd like to wish everybody a happy Hanukkah, Merry Christmas, and a Happy New Year.
I must confess, you have an astonishingly good idea there, Doctor.
Thank you, sir.
I came to dance, 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 dance. Yeah. I hit the floor cause that's my plans, 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 plans. Yeah. I'm wearing all my favorite brands, 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 brands. Yeah. Give me some space for both my hands.
Good morning, 528 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
Music is so upbeat this morning.
No,
I like
good.
It.
Well, I mean, we're talking about how, you know, we're losing the global war against China that's not yet a war. And, hey, let's have some Tayo Cruz. Why not?
Who could argue with that way of thinking? Yeah. The Supreme Court appears inclined to uphold a Tennessee law banning transgender care for minors. The High Court heard arguments on Tennessee's ban on the treatment for minors in the state yesterday. Legal experts say the conservative majority appears ready to let that law remain in place and leave future debates up to the state. Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell says any decision on interest rates this month won't be taking into account President-elect Trump's plans to raise tariffs and restrict immigration. While some experts say those plans could raise inflation, Powell said Wednesday he doesn't know the details of the plans and will not make policy based on limited information. And President Trump's first network interview since the election will be this coming Sunday on NBC's Meet the Press. The network says the interview will show moderator Kristen Welker will be, and that'll be taped on Friday and aired on Sunday.
Kristen Welker. Cool.
I can tell you're looking forward to it.
How much editing does he get?
Well, no, they'll do it live. It'll be live.
Oh, okay.
I assume it'll be live. Gosh, I hope that they don't try to do an edited version of this, but we need better news anchors. Just across the board. We just need... There are really smart people out there. They are not generally the ones that are running the show on TV for these things.
Fox News, I'm Chris Foster. The gunman who killed UnitedHealthcare CEO Brian Thompson outside a hotel in New York City yesterday may have left a message behind.
The gunman escaped through an alleyway before hopping on an e-bike and disappearing into Central Park. And now we are learning some clues as to a possible motive. Deny, depose, and defend written on live rounds and shell casings left behind by the masked assassin.
Fox's Chandler Painter. Two kindergarten boys are in what's being called critical, extremely critical condition after being shot at a Christian elementary school in Oroville, California.
Law enforcement officers located an adult male who was down, deceased from what appears to be a self-inflicted gunshot wound.
Sheriff Corey Honea says there's information the school may have been targeted because of its Seventh-day Adventist affiliation. Oroville's in Northern California. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning. It's 6:31 at News Radio 92.3. We've got 57 degrees right now. A little bit of rain in parts of our listening area. The search continuing today for a boy that went missing after a shrimping boat accident last week in Mobile Bay. Officials say they found the boat and the bodies of two people on the boat, the boy's father, Michael Slezak, and boat owner Sam Woolley last weekend. But there's so far been no sign of the child that was on board. Officials say the boat went under the water after a shrimp net snagged on something under the water. And the boat was found, but the cabin was missing. The search resuming this morning. Well, today it's Century's turn for railroad closures. Several CSX crossings in northern Escambia County will be closed today as crews perform maintenance work on the tracks. Those closures started early this morning between 2 and 5 a.m. and could last anywhere up to 72 hours, depending on the work required. Former Escambia County Medical Director Dr. Ramey Edler broke her silence this week surrounding the whistleblower lawsuit.
One of the things that I've learned, you know, where this case could have been worth, when you really go back and you look at all the documentation, could have been worth over $300 million that the county would have to pay back in fines to the federal government. They ended up settling the case for $5 million.
Edler was speaking at the Encounter Church on Nine Mile Road, and that was on Tuesday. The county paid the U.S. government $3.5 million, Edler $1.5 million, to settle that lawsuit. Edler was recently named the Whistleblower of the Year by the National Anti-Fraud Coalition. It was the first time she spoke publicly about the issues she encountered during and after exposing EMS training fraud in Escambia County. That resulted in five people being arrested, and again, the county settling that lawsuit for $5 million. Edler's speech is posted in its entirety on the News Radio Facebook page. Ron DeSantis may become a part of the Trump team. CNN reporting yesterday that Governor DeSantis is interested in serving as President-elect Trump's defense secretary. CNN cites two sources close to the governor. Trump has already nominated Pete Hegseth for that position, but there are reports that he may not be able to get confirmed. One source tells CNN that Trump and DeSantis did have a conversation about the job on Tuesday. Trump and DeSantis were both at a memorial service for three fallen Palm Beach County deputies on that day. An Osceola County woman is formally charged in the death of her daughter. State Attorney Andrew Bain announcing yesterday that a grand jury has indicted Kelsey Glover, the 35-year-old, charged with first-degree murder and aggravated assault with a deadly weapon. She allegedly drowned her daughter in a bathtub last month and attacked her roommate with a hammer when the woman tried to stop her. Glover's being held without bond. And there seems to be some disagreements between Hillsborough County Sheriff Chad Chronister and President-elect Trump. Chronister announced on Tuesday he was withdrawing from consideration to be the DEA administrator under Trump. But yesterday, Trump said he pulled Chronister's nomination to lead the agency. Trump wrote on Truth Social he did that because he didn't like what Chronister said to his pastors and other supporters. It is 6:35 at News Radio 92.3. John's got our traffic on the fives.
That's right. No accidents to let you know about right now. Looks like I-10 and I-110 are flowing smoothly. But if you're headed from downtown Milton into East Milton to the industrial complex, you're going to see some congestion delays there. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
We will have plenty of showers as you go through the morning hours. 80% chance of rain. Showers starting to clear up through the afternoon, high near 64 degrees. Overnight tonight, temperatures dropping near 35 degrees. As we head into Friday, mostly sunny skies, high near 54. Friday night, temperatures dropping near 38. Stay connected to Channel 3 News First Morning Weather Team. Download the WEAR-TV weather app. This is Brooke Richardson from the First Morning Weather Center.
Thank you very much, Brooke. And right now we are seeing mostly cloudy skies. We've got 58 degrees in Pensacola, 60 in Gulf Breeze, 58 in Milton. Our next news at 7 o'clock and breaking news anytime it happens. I'm David Wayne for News Radio 92.3.
I'm Nicole Murray with Your Money Now. U.S. Treasury bond yields rose this morning as investors digested a weaker-than-expected jobs report and looked ahead to further economic data due this week. The 10-year Treasury yield was more than 2 basis points higher at 4.209%. The price of Bitcoin soared past the long-awaited $100,000 benchmark for the very first time. The move comes after the S&P 500 and the NASDAQ registered new closing records yesterday. Bitcoin is now up more than 140% in 2024 and 48% since the election. U.S. services activity expanded in November at the slowest pace in 3 months as demand and employment growth settled back. The Institute for Supply Management Index of Services dropped 3.9 points, the first decline since June, to 52.1 last month. Futures are slightly lower. Wednesday, the Dow Industrials gained 308. The NASDAQ gained 254. That's Your Money Now.
My son loves to fly kites, but my active psoriatic arthritis can sometimes hold me back. Now with Skyrizi to treat my skin and joints, I'm ready to go. Skyrizi, risankizumab riza, a prescription-only 150 milligram injection for adults, helps with less joint pain, stiffness, swelling, and fatigue. For those who also have plaque psoriasis, 90% clearer skin is possible with just 4 doses a year after 2 starter doses.
Don't use if allergic to Skyrizi. Serious allergic reactions and an increased risk of infections or a lower ability to fight them may occur. Before treatment, your doctor should check for infection and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms, such as fever, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough, or if you plan to or recently received a vaccine.
With Skyrizi, there's nothing like clearer skin and better movement, and that means everything. Ask your doctor about Skyrizi today and visit Skyrizi.com or call 1-866-SKYRIZI to learn more.
Costello's Butcher Shop and Deli, where you can meet up and wine all you want. Costello's has all your fall barbecue needs ready for pickup, from Wagyu tomahawks, Wagyu chuck steaks, to quarter pound colossal Wagyu hot dogs, briskets, pork butts, and so much more. At Costello's, you'll find all the best forehead sandwich meats and cheeses, plus everything ready from charcuterie board to chicken salad and the best dessert pies, all at Costello's Butcher Shop, Deli, Fine Wine, and Cheeses. Find them today at the corner of Lillian Highway and Fairfield Drive in Pensacola.
Pep Talk? What's Pep Talk?
It's the Pensacola Expert Panel.
Experts? Experts in real estate?
Yes, that's us, Angela. We are the Pep Talk for real estate.
What will we talk about, Will?
We'll talk about the real estate industry.
Well, we don't just want to answer our own questions.
We want to answer the listeners' questions, Tune in today at 10 a.m. and we'll talk about real estate.
And whatever real estate questions you have.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Text or call with your questions. 850-437-1620.
Serving overseas was just the beginning. We might be home from war, but our mission continues in communities all across the country. It's why we're out there in times of peace and crisis, providing meals to the hungry and supplies to the sick. It's why we're giving strength to those who are too weak and bringing resources to those without them. Service doesn't stop when we're done serving. It's what makes us the VFW. Learn more at vfw.org.
Next time on Pensacola Right Now with Chris and Austin.
Afternoons are better on News Radio 92.3. Top trending stories, financial news, sports, flight information, interviews, traffic, and the most accurate five-day forecast. This is Chris Bryant along with Austin Price. It's Pensacola Right Now. Happens just after 4 on News Radio 92.3.
Pensacola Right Now with Chris and Austin. Weekdays 4 till 7 on News Radio 92.3.
Informative, local, dependable.
Ultimately, everything really goes back to two primary events. The first event being a meeting at Smokey's Barbecue in Pensacola on March 3rd of 2023, attended by various name parties. And the plaintiff ultimately speculates that meeting was not really about talking about their issues with her office. It was about a conspiracy to tarnish her reputation.
This is Luke Grabowski. He is the attorney for Richard Trahan, one of the two defendants, the funeral home directors, who are in a lawsuit litigation with Deanna Oleski, the medical examiner, where she says they defamed her both in the meeting at Smokey's that was with Stephen Berry, the county commissioner, although oddly, the county now claims that he was not in his official capacity at that meeting. Weirdest claim ever. That's why they don't want to release any documents or any records related to it. There are no records because it wasn't a meeting because he wasn't in his official capacity. I kid you not. That's actually the position being taken by the county right now. Anyway, so this, they said all kinds of horrible things about her. It was publicized by Jeff Bergosh on his blog and then came out in the news. And, she has now lost hundreds of thousands of dollars of income because her reputation is horribly smeared over this. And the allegations she says are false. The medical examiner's board investigated and said they were false. Charges have been brought, anything, some of the things that they allege would be crimes and, no evidence of any of that. So now she's suing them for defamation and has named Stephen Berry as a co-conspirator in this because he at least was there, if not organized the meeting and other matters. But, suing them, and he may become a named defendant either subsequently or later on in this. We don't know. Just hasn't happened yet. Anyway, Luke Grabowski says, look, they're alleging that we got that my clients got together and made these defamatory comments and then sent this defamatory letter. And this is all just opinion. The things that they said in these letters are just opinion.
The plaintiff essentially attempts to allege these statements, both written and verbal, are defamatory by arguing her subjective belief about what statements were made, what the intent was. In her response, she indicates that ultimately their written and verbal statements alleged that she was incompetent, that she's not qualified, that she's not capable, or that she was negligent in the performance of her duties. These are very much statements of opinion, and plaintiff's sole recourse in this case is to argue that she believes they're not. That's simply not permissible under Florida law.
See, if it's opinion, especially if it's opinion about either a matter of public importance, like the medical examiner's office that was proposed and being constructed at the time, only proposed, or about the role and function of a public official, whether Deanna Oleski is the medical examiner is or is not. I think maybe you could have some conversation. I would lean on the side that she is. But having an opinion about what a public official is doing is certainly a matter of protected speech. And that's what they're claiming, is these are matters of opinion and she's a public official and therefore we're all good. Well, the claims made are not just matters of opinion, as the lawyer for Deanna Oleski pointed out, Ryan Andrews.
Okay. Mr. Greg Grabowski cherry picks and states that, it's alleged only that his client said she was incompetent or unqualified. Not true. Mr. Trahan alleged that Dr. Oleski doesn't have the requisite training to perform autopsies. That has been alleged that he said this at this luncheon. Again, we've disclosed to the court where we've gotten this information from. The next, Dr. Oleski threatens and coerces doctors to change their cause of death, a crime under Florida statute, not opinion. That's a statement of fact.
So part of this case, this defamation case, is going to turn on whether the statements made by Trahan and Mitchell were matters of opinion, in which case they're protected, or matters of fact and demonstrably false, in which case they are defamatory, especially if they knew that they were false. Now, it's interesting because in this whole conversation, the lawyers have not made the case that what they said was true. I thought it was an interesting non-note, because if you can always defend yourself against defamation by claiming it's true. If it's true, you're clear. If it's not true, uh-oh. You know, then you've got other things that come into play, like malice, okay? Like, you know, reasonability and having, did you do your research? Were you making, you know, wild claims that are unsubstantiated, unsubstantiatable? Like, that's kind of the issue. But back to the specifics of the claims. Again, this is Ryan Andrews for Deanna Oleski talking about the specific claims being made as matters of fact, not matters of opinion.
Dr. Oleski engages in official misconduct, threatening doctors to change their cause of death for decedents. Again, a crime and alleges a violation of statute. Dr. Oleski fails to clean bodies and that she's so lazy and bad at her job she won't even release that, wash them when she releases them.
Remember when this was in the news?
Mr. Grabowski says, oh, well, Dr. Oleski in the same complaint alleges it's not her job. That's what makes it so pervasive. They say that she tenders all these dirty bodies as if it's her job to clean these bodies. But aside from that, she has never tendered a dirty body as per the allegations in the complaint.
And again, these allegations have been investigated and no substance to any of them found. And if they turn out to be matters of fact, which the defendants here, the funeral home directors, knew were false and made them up or exaggerated them, and it cost her to lose money, which it did, then they're going to be on the hook for this. Now, there's other stuff to I'll get to the second, but the reason we're talking about this and sharing this is because Judge Jen Shackelford, the defendants keep asking her to dismiss the case, and she just ruled that she's not going to dismiss it. It's going to move forward. So it becomes relevant to think about the issues and implications here. And it's also a very interesting case because, you know, we've had some of these like defamation sort of issues and also some of the anti-slap and slaps kind of questions come up here, just like they had come up before when we were dealing with the stuff that Escambia County did against like Jonathan Owens and the PNJ. And, you know, I'll kind of compare those for you in a second. But John Pickens has got traffic on the fives. John?
That's right. No accidents to report to you right now. But if you're traveling on 9th Avenue between Cervantes and Gregory Street, you're going to see some congestion delays there, about a 7 to 8 minute delay in that area. Other than that, traffic looks good. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
Thanks so much, John. Back to the conversation at the hearing where the defendants were requesting a dismissal. Ultimately, that was not granted. Judge Jen Shackelford allowed this lawsuit to go forward, making very particular claims, fact claims. Again, that's the key here. Not just matters of opinion, but fact claims that can be either proven or disproven. But if they are known to be false, and they are made and they harm somebody, then you have a cause for defamation, which is the basis of this lawsuit.
Dr. Oleski does not tie off veins or arteries during the autopsy. Statement of fact. Dr. Oleski cannot perform an autopsy in any way but negligent. Statement of fact, not opinion. Dr. Oleski and her staff drop bodies on their heads. Statement of fact. Dr. Oleski is less skilled and takes less pride than a Winn-Dixie butcher. Again, we're talking about someone who performs autopsies on dead bodies, and they're saying she performs them as if she's slaughtering a cow, right? Goes to her skill and the performance of her duties as a doctor and medical examiner. Dr. Oleski lacks the training required to perform an autopsy. Not true. She's a board-certified medical examiner, or a pathologist. She clearly has the training. She was appointed for the job. They know it. It was a false statement of fact.
Now, I think some of these get closer to matters of opinion or rhetorical flair around an opinion, but clearly many of these are fact claims. So that's going to be a problem for them in defending themselves against this defamation lawsuit. And by the way, it's kind of a funny, odd, horrible outcome that this scheme that, in my opinion, was clearly designed to run her off, to ruin her reputation and run her off and make her want to quit and go home and leave. The irony is it worked too well because it so ruined her reputation that, I mean, where is she going to go? You Google her name, the first thing that comes up is all of this stuff. Because of what they did and what they said and what Stephen Barry facilitated and what Jeff Bergosh facilitated by publishing it on his blog. I mean, it worked too well. She can't leave and go anywhere else as an ME. So guess what? You know, you picked a stubborn woman, she's going to stay and fight. And she has been fighting. So anyway, one of the other elements in this case, one of the other elements here was, is this a slap suit? As in, if she's a public official, is she trying to silence the free speech rights of Trey Hannah Mitchell, right? That's what they're kind of aiming at. This is Michael Kelly for Gerald Mitchell.
It's evident that Dr. Oleski is intending to put forward that this Smokies gathering was an assembly to set forth some type of plan to get statements about how plaintiff transmitted to the public via news publication. You know, and this is a matter of public concern that was discussed at this, once again, a meeting that Dr. Oleski was not present at, but that's a separate issue, as Mr. Grabowski indicated.
By the way, their complaint is that how can you know the things that took place at this meeting since you weren't there? And also, why do you keep adding details to this in the subsequent filings? We'll get to that as a fascinating note in just a second. But of course, remember, we had one of the funeral home directors on the show, Bailey, who changed his allegations and didn't understand that he was, you know, being kind of taken advantage of for political purpose and all of this, and recanted a lot of what he said. So he was there. So we know from him, or there, you know, Deanna Oleski and her lawyer, Ryan Andrews, would know from him what happened at this meeting. Anyway, back to Michael Kelly's comments about, you know, why this is all an inappropriate silencing of the First Amendment, a slap suit, basically.
Any supposedly defamatory statements that would have been made during that gathering would be constitutionally protected. Same applies with regards to the Board of Commissioners letter. There's really, those are the two main issues that are referenced against my client. You know, my client outlining his concerns about plaintiff's performance in a letter is constitutionally protected speech and something that the anti-slap statute was specifically put in place to protect.
Okay, in principle, that can be true. I mean, if somebody's engaging in First Amendment speech, like the PNJ reporting on the content of the Bergosh text messages and the county trying to suppress their ability to do that, they're trying to suppress the PNJ's rightful news gathering opportunities and trying to thwart their First Amendment rights, which is exactly what was decided about that case. So if that's what she's doing, if she is suing them in order for them to be made silent over their right to criticize her, which they do have First Amendment rights to criticize her, well, that's one thing. But if what they're saying is false, knowably false, it was part of a conspiracy to defame her for whatever political or other economic purpose, well, that's no longer a slap. That's defamation. If she's going after them for that, it's justified. And that's going to be the distinction that is going to have to be made in the actual trial. So what's fascinating also is they keep making this claim. I didn't play the clip for you, but many times kind of hinted at the idea of how can you know these things? How can you prove these things? How can you, you know, what evidence? We have the letters, which have their own content, but the meeting at Smokies, how do you know about that? Well, they have simultaneously been preventing discovery, depositions, and questioning of witnesses to find out what happened at the Smokies meeting while claiming that nobody could possibly know what took place at the Smokies meeting. You cannot have that both ways.
The perniciousness of objecting to all the discovery and then coming to court today and suggesting, oh gosh, where did all these new allegations from? Like suggesting that they've been made up out of thin air is precisely why discovery should proceed before a ruling on this case if the court's inclined to grant their motion, because they're coming in and arguing to the court, or suggesting at least, that these allegations were made up out of thin air. They were additional allegations based on interviews of Rick Bailey, who was present for the meeting. And so they would have had the opportunity to learn these things, as we would have been had the opportunity to learn much more as well, had the discovery request been answered and some bit of depositions occurred.
Why is the county unwilling to disclose the records and pretending that Stephen Barry wasn't acting in his official capacity when he organized this meeting? Why are they afraid to have discovery where we could actually find out what was said in more detail from the people who were present at the meeting under penalty of perjury if they lie about it, unless there are things to be hidden, unless there's more to either be confirmed or to be discovered, right? That's So anyway, good for Judge Shackelford for saying that this needs to go through. Good for her for not even coming back and trimming at the edges, particularly on the complaint, and saying that even portions of this can't go through to court. So this will happen. There is a chance for them to respond. They got 20 days. Well, they had 20 days from the order, which was Monday or Friday, I think, something like that. So this is ongoing. We'll see what happens. But this, to me, falls into the category of good for her, again, another public official standing up and fighting against the political machine in Escambia County, trying to ruin, harm, scare, intimidate people out of doing what they're supposed to be doing. It's just the ugliest of possible politics. And, you know, we have a history of this in this county. And the only way it's going to get better is if people understand, care, vote, and take action. 654 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. If you're thinking about selling your home, you want to get a good realtor who's going to represent you and understand how to get you all the way through to closing with the best price and navigating any of the hurdles that come up along the way. You do that through experience. Christine Leavenworth and her team at Leavenworth Realty sold 175 homes last year. They're on track to do about the same again this year. That means three and a half a week, week after week after week. They are doing this and know how to get it done. That involves everything from how to stage it, how to photograph it, how to list it, the price to ask, how to do open houses, how to handle negotiations, how to do follow-up. I mean, you think, well, everybody knows that. Do they get the same results? Does everybody know that? I mean, theoretically, but for some reason or another, Christina Leavenworth and her team, they just do this really effectively. And so they know how to get this job done. So if you want a good price for your home, even when to sell it, she can give you advice about that. That's why you hire a good real estate agent. 723-9158 for Christina Leavenworth and her team at Leavenworth Realty. John Pickens has got traffic on the fives. John?
That's right. No new accidents to report to you right now. The roadways are looking good. If you're going northbound on Highway 29 between East Kingsfield and East Roberts Road, we're just getting congestion delays there. Not a big thing, but I want you to be aware of it. I'm John Pickens.
You think that's related to the railroads up in Century? It seems like kind of a far thing to influence it that much, but probably not. Okay. Just curious.
No, that's really good news. Yeah.
If you're struggling with ED or your performance is down and your belly fat is growing, listen up. You've got one life. Now is the time to act.
At Wave Men's Health, we're not just healthcare. We're your secret weapon. Don't wait another day. Here's why you need to act right now.
Every moment you delay, your condition could worsen. It's not just about sex. It's about your heart, your relationship, your life.
Wave Men's Health has years of proven results for low testosterone and increasing drive, energy level, and performance. We've introduced ED and enhancement treatments so exclusive, you'll wonder why you waited.
Procrastination is the thief of time. When it comes to your sexual health, you can't afford to wait. Join the league of gentlemen who've walked out of our doors with a swagger.
Call Wave Men's Health at 850-266-7020 or visit wavemenshealth.com. Book your $99 male performance consultation now, including blood work. Call 850-266-7020 or visit wavemenshealth.com. Wave Men's Health, making it happen.
Visit Prim and Proper in Gulf Breeze for custom engraving and unique gifts. Specializing in creating extraordinary keepsakes, their expert engravers bring your vision to life with elegant monograms, personalized messages, and logos. Whether it's custom drinkware, engraved glassware, or home decor, each piece is crafted with attention to detail for any occasion. Perfect for birthdays, anniversaries, weddings, or corporate gifts, Prim and Proper ensures your gift will leave a lasting impression. Stop by their Gulf Breeze location or visit them online at primandproper.com.
Join Claimology today at 9:30 on the Pensacola Expert Panel. Matthew Vanderford with Claimology will be talking about insurance claims. He'll be discussing storm claims, as well as the importance of being properly insured prior to a storm and inspections after a storm. Matthew will be taking calls to answer your questions, so you'll know what to do before the next storm arrives. That's today at 9:30 with Claimology on the Pensacola Expert Panel.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
Have you given your auto loan a second thought lately? Just like you might refinance a home for a better deal, you can do the same with your auto loan. Refinance an existing loan from another institution with PenAir Credit Union and lower your interest rate by up to 2%. Plus, you can skip payments for the first 90 days. Take your old auto loan off of autopilot with PenAir to lower your interest and payments. Learn more at PenAir.org/auto-refi. That's PenAir.org/auto-refi. All loans are subject to approval. Offer valid on loan applications submitted between November 1st and December 31st, 2024 only. Call toll-free 1-877-4-PENAIR for complete details.
News Radio 92.3 gets you live programming every day from 5 a.m. until 7 p.m. on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
I must have started off to Mardi Gras 6 or 7 times. Never got further in the state line.
Good morning, 659 News Radio 92.3. I'm Andrew McKay. David Wayne is in the newsroom this morning with our headlines. David?
Well, Bitcoin passed a major milestone yesterday. It hit the $100,000 mark for the first time. The price of Bitcoin has gone up by $35,000 now in a month. If you would have invested $1,000 in 2010, what do you think it'd be worth now?
$1,000 in 2010? 50
grand? $365
million. Listen on air at 92.3, 95.3, and AM 1620. News Radio 92.3. WNRP, Gulf Breeze, Milton, Pensacola.